essentially, the roadmap for Aug splits into the current generation and next generation. So let's go over what we already have, which is, would be the current generation. The current generation encapsulation format, you're all familiar with the Aug file format. There's always a little bit of confusion about the name Aug. Aug is actually the name of the entire project, and one of the first things we did was the encapsulation format, which was the basis of the project, so that encapsulation format is named Aug. It is not particularly incorrect to refer to the entire thing, including all the codecs, as Aug. But just so you know, there is a technical distinction between the two. The Aug format, and this is also somewhat misunderstood, was intended for one thing: linear representation of multiple media types. That means that it stores things in presentation order so that the decoders are fed just as they need things to present frames and audio frames and video frames for playback. It's a linear representation. It's not a nonlinear representation like QuickTime, which functions as both, or some of the MPEG products. The idea is that it takes your media and freezes it in a form that it's then easy to unfreeze and use for other things, such as, you know, pushing over an HTTP push stream. You're all familiar with Icecast and so on. The other idea behind the Aug encapsulation was that it is intended to have a very wide sweet spot for the things that you put into it. You can do everything from 5 to 10 byte near silence Vorbis packets all the way up to near megabyte size video frames, and it still sits in its sweet spot of representation. Framing overhead is about 1%, more or less across the board. You can break that. There are certainly examples and situations where it's going to be a little higher, but for the most part, the idea was the widest possible sweet spot that doesn't make any assumptions whatsoever about the data that you're putting into it. LibAug1, some of you are also familiar with. No doubt if you've ever tried to write anything involved with Aug, you're way too familiar with it in the sense that LibAug1 was a much lower level library than we had intended to provide as the API to use for Aug. It's practically nothing more than a set of glorified C macros in some way. It's a bit banging library and it is difficult to use. A lot of the problems that people have with Aug, a lot of the frustrations that people have with coding with Aug, is not actually the file format itself. It has to do with the fact that LibAug1 is not doing very much for you. That's a current generation thing that needs to be fixed sometime between now and before we get to the next generation. Next. You're all familiar with Vorbis. I don't have an awful lot to say about it other than to stress the fact that, despite the fact that Vorbis is coming up on 10 years old, it's still one of the newest generation audio codecs out there. It is still best in class across nearly its entire operating range. Like Aug, Vorbis was intended to be the general purpose audio codec that is almost or the perfect choice for practically anything you'd want to do with audio. It has a very wide sweet spot from near lossless all the way down to very low bitrate. And in Vorbis's case, very low bitrate would be CD rate audit stereo audio at down to, say, 45 kilobits or a little below. There are a few codecs that go, well, there's one codec that goes a little lower than that now and does so reasonably well, and that's the newest of the AAC family. You're all familiar with it. It's used in X7 series radio, for example. And that is the one place where a codec does actually function a little better than Vorbis over part of its operating range. Vorbis blows away AAC above those ultra-low bit rates and still does. So despite its age, it's mature and proven, and despite its age, it's still generally best in class across most of its sweet spot. There are a few things that were never implemented because although there was demand for them, there wasn't consistent high-level demand. Those things basically fall into detailed surround couplings, peeling, and an integer encoder. There's been an integer decoder forever. Theora, Derp just talked about it. I'm not going to say much more. You're all familiar. You probably all know it was originally based on the VP3 codec. The VP3 codec and Theora still share a lot in common. We plan on diverging fairly sharply from that in the near future, but we're going to ship 1.0 first. It's a solidly previous generation codec. It is still competitive. Just because it's old doesn't mean that it doesn't fill its niche fairly well. It's essentially a very low complexity codec. And most of the performance problems associated with VP3, and there are some, let's not pretend there aren't, come down to the fact that the encoder is not particularly efficient. The format has room to grow with where it is. The encoder that we're shipping is Onto's original encoder, and it's essentially 15-year-old technology. We've gotten a lot better at coding audio since then. I've been working on a brand new encoder called Fusnelda. If you're interested in it, talk to me later or go to Derf's talk. Where did Derf go? Not important. The original VP3 decoder is already replaced in the main line entirely. the other AUG codec speaks. I think the battery on this thing may be going or something because it's just getting cracklier and cracklier. Speaks, best-in-class neural and wideband speech codec. There's not a lot to say because there aren't any caveats to using it. Speaks is a great codec. The other codec that is in the AUG umbrella right now is FLAC, free lossless audio compression. And then there are associated projects with the current generation of AUG, Anadex, which I hope all of us know and love. Everybody give Anadex a hug. Skeleton, which is a metadata stream that goes into AUG files. Because we intentionally do not put detailed information about a given collection of AUG streams into an AUG file at the encapsulation layer, obviously that data has to be there somewhere. It goes into the skeleton, and the skeleton slash metadata. Skeleton is metadata. Should have had a verb there. Primary challenges to AUG are non-technical. Patent food. FUD is the biggest one. And although we have plenty of willing contributors, we don't have an awful lot of sponsorship. Technical challenges really consist mostly of getting the work done. There aren't a lot of tricks to sitting down and banging it out, and that falls into the category of documentation. Lots of documentation. By far, most of the work that needs to be done is documentation. And then there are the pieces that are unfinished in the current generation. Obviously, LibAUG, for example, right now, it doesn't even do all the muxing for you. You still have to do all that decision hierarchy in your own application yourself. Once 100 different application developers have all written their own AUG muxer, and you know all the bugs that come out of that, all that chaos is our own damn fault. We need to get out the library that we should have written to begin with. Next generation. The encapsulation format, there's a document that I did not have done in time for this conference. There's a proposed revision of the encapsulation, and it is minor tweaks. We're not talking about a whole new encapsulation. We're not talking about throwing AUG out the window. We're not talking about magically seeing the light and deciding that NUT was the right solution all the time. We're talking about a few minor tweaks to AUG where 10 years after originally setting the format specification, we've looked and said in a lot of cases where we had choice A and choice B, they were roughly equivalent. We thought, maybe one worked a little better than the other. We'll take A. We think it's going to be better. Turned out B was 5% better. Well, if we're going to revise the format, we're going to take all those minor things all at once and get them in all at once. Again, proposed revision. We haven't decided to do anything yet. A document will be up for comments sometime soon. LibAUG 2, just talked about it. Next generation codec, Ghost. There won't be a talk about it because as yet it's vaporware. Kelt, which is not vaporware, but is a spin-off from the Ghost project. That's Jean-Marc Alain. He is working on something. Basically, Kelt is a general purpose audio codec that is designed to be ultra low latency, and we're talking 10 millisecond round trips, encoder and decoder, with quality that is comparable to Vorbis. And then Duroc. You've all just heard about Duroc. Yeah, okay, that's it.
Yes, thanks. Sorry, there's no time for questions because we're pretty tightly packed in the schedule, so feel free to buy Monty a beer later and ask him anything you like.
Or Red Bull. Red Bull's good too. No, really.
Okay, hi everybody. Thanks to the LCA Multimedia Mini Conference for having me. My name's Anna Helm. I'm from the Engaged Media Collective, and there's a couple of other members of the collective here today, Dave and Andrew, who's going to be doing a little presentation on Tactical Tech, another project he works on. So I wanted to talk you through the FOSS Video Codecs report that we wrote last year and talk a little bit about the social context for FOSS Video Codecs and features and tools that we need to promote their usability and uptake in social change video sharing networks. Just a little bit about Engage Media. We're a small nonprofit based here in Melbourne. Our core aims as an organization are around assisting individuals and groups producing thought-provoking and informative content focused on social and environmental issues, fostering a regional network of producers to assist each other in producing and distributing their work in Southeast Asia and Pacific regions, training to develop the digital media and internet skills of independent video makers and marginalized communities, and finally, software, which has become a much bigger focus than we originally thought it would, to produce an online video delivery platform under a free software license that others are free to use and modify for their own media projects. So in terms of that, the main kind of things we're involved in are the Engage Media website, which is a video sharing community focusing on Southeast Asia, Australia and the Pacific, and social justice and environmental issues. There's also the Plume video sharing application based on Plone, and also work with the Transmission Network. And yeah, Transmission is a network of online video distribution projects for social change. And I'll talk a bit more about that in a minute. That's the front page of our website. You can see the latest videos and featured videos, news and events, and browse the collection by topics, countries, genres, or tags. These are some of the ways that we differ from the big commercial video sharing web services out there and why we feel important. Independent video sharing sites are really important. So this is something that we're yet to implement, but whatever revenue that we generate through the Engage Media video site will go back to the producers rather than obviously the commercial web services where the advertising revenue goes back to the company. YouTube doesn't offer a download of videos for redistribution, and this is something that we think is really important to build into our video sharing platforms to allow that video then to be used on community television or on DVD compilations, film festivals and the like. Rather than the YouTube license, which you have to grant permission to YouTube for them to use your video in any media format in perpetuity, we offer instead a Creative Commons, another open content licensing system, giving the choice about how your video is redistributed to the producer. Obviously, it's a free software platform that we work on, as opposed to a closed software platform. And we're really about giving community management of the site back to members of that community. And we're not about to sell that community to anyone either. Another important thing, I guess, is the issue of censorship. And there's many cases now of videos being taken down by YouTube for one reason or another. And they're obviously susceptible to political and economic pressures. And autonomous video sites can resist those pressures more effectively. This is the demo online, plume.org, demo.plume.org. This is what the video sharing package looks like out of the box. We built the software we needed to run engagemedia.org using various modules and customizations built into the Plone open source content management system. However, we wanted to package this up for other community video projects to be able to install and run their own video sharing site. So we created this Plume project. Some of the features of Plume is obviously video publishing, also other content call-outs, which is calls for submissions to film festivals or other video projects, news events, commenting and favorites. We use a package called IndieTube, which does server-side transcoding to Flash and then embedded playback using the Flow Player. Which is CMS agnostic. I'll go into that a bit in more detail later. Transcoding to Flash at the moment, but obviously we want to move to OGG, and we've done a few bits of experimental development there, and hopefully it won't be too difficult. You can embed other kinds of videos using the Video Play in Place software. There's video podcasting. Those vodcasts are generated on an author or genres, countries, or topics, and you can view those video podcasts in the Miro application, which we train a lot of video makers to use. tagging, open content licensing. There's a great workflow system for publishing and moderating of video and other content. Video maker profiles is a really important aspect for us in terms of setting up a video community. And you also have a workspace where you can share files with other people and work on them collaboratively. This is the Transmission website. We had our first Transmission meeting for online video distributors working around social justice and environmental issues in June of 2006. There was another event in London after that called Retransmission. Recently, there was a VX mission meeting to coincide with Video Vortex in Amsterdam, and we're going to hold an Asia-Pacific regional meeting in May this year in Indonesia. On the website, you can browse through members' video feeds. There's a lot more feeds down the bottom of the page. Or you can visit our wiki to look at the collaborative work being done in different working groups, such as there's a subtitles working group, there's a Drupal working group. There's a group working on a metadata standard so we can share content more effectively between our autonomous websites. And really, the Transmission Network is designed to make a network of autonomous video sharing sites viable by collaborating on software and also by sharing our content. This is just a list of some of the network members, mainly from the US and from Europe, but also there's members from South America and Asia, and we aim to broaden this further when we have our meeting in Indonesia this year. Yes, and this brings me to the report into free and open source software video codecs. I'll read through some of the more interesting aspects of the research, but you can download the full version at engagemedia.org/codex. There's links to the PDF for download and to the wiki. I put out the second version of this, I think it was in November last year, so it's already, you know, pretty out of date because things are moving so fast, but we'll probably do another update on the wiki with some recent developments soon. So just to introduce this, over the last 40 years, the means to create and disseminate the moving image have become increasingly democratized, from portapacks to camcorders, VHS to DVD. Video technologies have continued to open access to ordinary people to tell their own stories. The explosion of online video distribution has brought new opportunities and challenges for those committed to making sure these technologies are not just available to purchase and use, but that their evolution can be shaped collectively, that they're free to be modified, built upon, and shared. There's a growing need to ensure that the technologies for distributing our media are not held in the hands of a small number of corporations, locked in onerous patents, or trapped by proprietary software that may be priced out of our reach. Also, beyond the ethical reasons for choosing FOSS, there are also a range of practical reasons. Most social change video makers cannot afford proprietary tools or have more pressing financial priorities. Additionally, with the right approach, open source development practices can facilitate the rapid development of software that is just as good or even better than their proprietary equivalents. But whilst most or many activist groups have a commitment to using FOSS generally, most currently employ or promote proprietary video codecs such as Flash, QuickTime, and Windows Media. This is largely due to the historical lack of easy ways to employ FOSS solutions in this area, and this is a problem that we wanted to look at in this research and a collaborative development initiative that will come out of this as well. So we conducted this report in 2007, seeking to outline the current state of free and open source software codecs and containers, particularly how they might evolve and be implemented by social justice organizations within the Transmission Network. As I explained, Transmission is a network of citizen journalists, video makers, artists, researchers, programmers, and web producers who are developing online video distribution tools for social justice and media democracy. So that was the audience that we really had in mind while writing this. FOSS Codecs for Online Video, Usability, Uptake, and Development. It's a review of available tools for the creation, playback, and embedding of online video using free and open source software video codecs. But also look at the most pressing areas for development to enhance their adoption by social change video projects on the web. Research was comprised of two distinct areas, one through the traditional gathering analysis and filtering of materials, and the other through a degree of experimental development to examine the potential to extend available tools and open up new ways to use FOSS codecs within our video sharing platforms. These are the areas of research that we were looking into. That areas we looked at included a comparison of FOSS codecs, compatible media players available for each platform, desktop tools for encoding to FOSS codecs, server-side transcoding of video, playback options within the browser, and a look at implementation within current popular open source content management systems. Each area was examined in terms of the usability of available tools and a look at development initiatives in each area that were likely to cover the gaps in terms of mature software that would be implemented by our audiences. So it's a 55-page report that you can look at in more detail, but I just thought I'd go into the summary of recommendations. The report provides a general understanding of FOSS audio-video codecs and recommends what we believe are the most viable options for implementing them. It also aims to encourage collaboration amongst projects committed to free technologies to avoid replication, to conserve our resources, and ultimately fire up development to build great FOSS video tools. Areas that needed improvement that we found included transcoding on the desktop, particularly creating OGG files from DV files that you've exported from an editing application. And that step prior to uploading via online video distribution networks, and also embedded playback. There's now GUIs available for each platform to transcode to OGG on the desktop, but the creation of a simple, you know, preset or one-click transcoder that can be used on each platform, we thought would do much to encourage users to take up OGG. As far as embedded playback is concerned, there's a number of areas for improvement, including work on the plugins, the Cortado Java applet, and the very exciting native browser playback of OGG that's being worked on. Finally, also, OGG support needs to be implemented within the major video sharing content management systems that are being developed. There's Plume, which we're working on for Plone. There's also a project called FilmForge for Drupal. With very similar aims and similar functionalities. And there's also Show in a Box, which is a WordPress video package. So yeah, each of these projects is part of the transmission network and has shown some interest in getting on board collaborative development around OGG support, which is great. I'll just go through this very quickly. The recommendations for the adoption of existing tools. You know, we mainly looked at supporting Xvid and LAME, as well as OGG, Fiora, and Vorbis. VLC is a very easy application to recommend to members of our network and their users. It's cross-platform and very easy to use and supports both of those codecs. There's FFmpeg to Fiora for server-side transcoding of OGG. And you can also use mEncoder and FFmpeg for Xvid. In terms of transcoders that are available on the desktop, the best one we found for Linux was called OGG Convert. For Mac, there's the simple Fiora encoder GUI for FFmpeg to Fiora, and Media Coder we found to be the most usable. I mean, there's so many different options out there, but the most usable transcoding application for Windows. In terms of making Xvid, Abby Demux we found was the most easy to use application. FFmpeg X for Macintosh, which is based on mEncoder and FFmpeg. And once again, Media Coder for Windows. So as far as the development of tools goes, I haven't got that much longer to talk about this. Anyway, there's been a bit of talk about HTML5 already today, I think, and about the video element specification. So I'll just try and skip through some of the conversation on that because it's probably already been talked about. the implications for HTML5 and video playback center around the use of that video element and native video decoding capabilities to be built into future web browsers. Obviously, doubling as a media player without the need to invoke a plugin. And we've had a bit of talk about the proposal that Ogg was a baseline codec in that specification. Obviously, that hasn't eventuated. But the rejection of Ogg as a baseline codec has stimulated a lot of debate on the internet, I think, about FOSS codecs in general. And there's been a lot of publicity about the native playback of video within the browser, even though it's not going to be a baseline codec. I think that's positive.
Just completely aside.
Okay. Seems fairly unlikely.
No, actually it doesn't.
Really?
Really.
Okay. So anyway, regardless of what happens there, it's, I think, a good time to push forward with Ogg support, as many more people are being made aware of the advantages of FOSS video technologies as a result of that process. So in terms of what needs to be done, in order to coordinate development around Ogg support in these key areas, we think that resources need to be allocated to the formation of a consortium of key groups for collaborative development around some of these ideas. I was just going to talk about some of the specifications that we had drafted in terms of these different applications. These specifications can obviously evolve once we form a consortium of people who want to work on these projects. It's obviously important to keep in mind during development a few principles that will aid in efficiency and uptake of the tools that we either improve or produce. Where possible, we'll seek to build on the momentum of prior projects, build upon or reuse code from existing applications and libraries, and refrain from reinventing any wheels. It's vital that we learn from the experiences of other software projects in this field in order to avoid producing shelfware, which I think has happened when trying to address some of these needs previously. And another important concern is that we develop applications that are going to be ready for Dirac as it matures, as well as for Ogg Fiora. So each area of development is split into software requirements in the report and a list of key existing projects that we can use as building blocks for development, either as foundational components or simply as existing software in the area to reference. As far as building a transcoder uploader client is concerned, this is really about doing a lot of training with video makers who don't even want to, get involved in the step of compressing their video at all, find that whole process very challenging. So it's also trying to address the need of uploading large files over HTTP, which can be problematic. So we were sort of thinking about this idea of combining these functionalities into really a video publisher that transcodes pretty transparently in the background to Ogg Fiora, and then uploads the video to your chosen content management system. So it would require simple preset encoding to Ogg Fiora Vorbis, designed to compress your DV video, which is, obviously far too big to upload. Even if you have a content management system that does server-side transcoding of video, that's not much good if you're trying to get your DV file up. So there is actually that, transcoding step that you need to perform before getting it up there in the first place. And we're really interested in getting that down to what we consider to be screening quality Ogg video, stuff that you can download in Miro and then screen, and it's reasonable enough quality for that, or even for putting on a DVD or showing in a film festival. We need the ability to add metadata, and the transmission network is developing a metadata standard at the moment, so it would be based on that standard. You need to be able to choose your open content license, whichever you prefer. Resumable uploads, so either using BitTorrent or FTP, depending. And then the ability to configure your client to connect to your different content management systems and to your account. It also should have a batch or multiple upload queuing system, and you know, have usability features like drag and drop of video files as well. There's a couple of applications that exist already that would be good to do some work on. There's the V2V uploader. That has BitTorrent upload, and it's developed by Jan, who produced the FFmpeg2 Theora and Simple Theora encoder applications as well, and it allows you to attach metadata, and I think he's produced a Mac and a Linux version of that, so we could look at expanding that as well. Or there's the CC Publisher, which I don't know if anyone's used. This is sort of a bit of an example of shelfware. It hasn't really been used that much, it seems. That just allows you to attach a Creative Commons license and upload your video via FTP, so we can look at expanding those applications potentially. Or another idea that's been raised is the idea of a Firefox add-on, which would have those same functionalities that you could just use as an extension to Firefox. There's various uploader applications that have already been made for Firefox, so you just have to build in the transcoding element. And then in terms of browser playback, we really want to look at implementing OGG support into IndieTube, which is already our CMS agnostic package for server-side transcoding and embedded playback. It's a basic script for re-encoding arbitrary video files to Flash video at the moment, and then including that video in the browser with a Flash video player. It's written in Python and uses mencoder, FLV tool to write some metadata into it, and using the Cheetah template library for Python and a Twisted networking framework to scan directory for files for new videos to encode. So that's how it works at the moment. We've developed IndieTube quite a bit already, and it's quite stable and usable. At the moment, it offers any transmission project or anyone else the ability to asynchronously transcode video that's been uploaded by users into Flash while retaining the original file for download. And the great thing about it is it really does offer a YouTube-like experience for the user, progressive download in a neat embedded video player. The user can click the video to start playing, it's got seeking control, and watch the video full screen as well, and copy and paste an object and an embed tag into their blog. So it's really, the user experience is really up to a standard that users expect from a commercial web service, and we feel that with implementation of OGG into that package, we really need to be achieving similar kind of levels of usability. So I think there's, I'm not sure if Michael from the MetaVid project is probably going to talk a bit more about MV Embed today. Yeah? Okay, cool. So I won't sort of explain that at all because he's going to go into it, but it's basically about adding that script to support all available OGG playback methods and whatever you happen to have installed, either a browser that supports OGG natively or your browser plugins, or finally the Cortado Java applet if that's all that is available. It's already experimentally got the Icecast streaming server working with it if you want to use that to stream your files instead of progressive download. So then really it's about implementation and support for implementation of IndieTube in the different video content management systems and documentation for that. Just out of interest, that is Show in a Box, the WordPress package. It's an example of that. And this is the FilmForge package as well, and the Plumy package. So I'm running over time, I'll end it there. If anybody wants to talk to me afterwards about any of that, please do. And that's it.
Cheers, thanks, Anna. Just while they're setting up, I'll just mention that the network is up. I've just put the schedule for the extra lightning talks and things that are on today onto the wiki for this mini-conf. So if you search for that wiki, LCA Multimedia, and then you can see that schedule there.
Power. Yeah, this was Anna's. Cool. Much forgot to about 10 minutes.
Does everyone hear me okay? So my name is Andrew. I work actually with Engage Media, but I also work with another organization called Tactical Technology Collective. And we do a few different things. It's actually an organization that's based in Brighton in the UK and Bangalore in India, doing something weird. These are the key aims of the organization, which are to advocate and extend sustainable and appropriate forms of technology for nonprofits in developing countries. So our primary... God, that's very annoying, isn't it? Okay, see how that goes. Most of our work is in developing countries. So a lot of it's really about access, so breaking down the barriers to technology access, so hence an interest in free and open source as a solution to that. Working with a lot of social movements and really, again, the kind of appropriate technology, so not fetishizing the technology too much and not delivering solutions to people that aren't going to work. So we're kind of fairly picky about the kind of technology that we advocate and train people in, because if we train them in something that might be, you know, great and free and open source, etc., but then, you know, doesn't work really, really well and really, really easily for them, then they're just going to go straight back to Windows. So we kind of have a very picky or demanding user base, you might say. And then I guess on top of that, we also kind of try and strategically use that technology in particular trajectories. So really around things like information-based activism, the people we're working with are generally working for non-government organizations, so they might be environmental campaigners, or they might be working on human rights issues in Burma, or things like this. So it's really, yeah, we can't give them solutions that are ethically great, but don't necessarily, you know, work straight out of the box. So one of the things we do is source camps, so training in free and open source software, and now moving into something that we're calling information activism. And these have happened in Uganda, Indonesia, Namibia, Croatia. I'll put Indonesia twice. Tajikistan and Thailand. And there'll be another one coming up in the Philippines later, towards the end of the year, an information info activism camp. And then part of the idea is we really try and bring, I guess, a kind of free and open source methodology to the camp. So they aren't really teachers. We don't really do this, where you don't really have people kind of getting up and talking At People, it's really about kind of peer-based, free and open collaboration, essentially, and then forming ongoing peer networks that can kind of operate autonomously apart from us, where people, you know, send questions to each other and build relationships and basically form a base of support to for their work into the future. My main role in the organization is actually producing a series of free and open source toolkits. I have a bunch of these. I may have enough for everyone, but I'm not sure. But I'll put them down somewhere here at the end. I guess that's what I mainly wanted to talk about, mostly around the audio, video, and the open publishing editions that we've created. So they're basically a set of tools and guides aimed at NGOs, campaigners, and activists. So it's a curated set of free and open source tools along particular thematic lines. So there's, I can skip to this, open publishing edition, which is a green one, which is essentially kind of on and offline publishing tools. So kind of recommends various CMSs. It has, you know, things like Scribus and Inkscape and GIMP and all those type of tools. The audio video box, which obviously is about audio and video, but you know, audio and video editing and online distribution and DVD creation and things like that. And then Base, which is kind of everyday tools for setting up an organization. So office type tools, Gantt charts, all the non-sexy stuff. And then a security edition, which is I guess fairly obvious, but I don't work on the security one. So the thing that we're trying to do is make FOSS. More accessible to people in developing countries where bandwidth is often limited, by providing them direct access to the free tools and materials that they need. So they're kind of, you know, in hand. You don't have to go and download it. You don't have to search for it. You don't have to find out which is actually the best tool. We're kind of making a recommendation that, you know, if you want to do, I mean, in some ways for a lot of people it might be obvious. If you want to do photo editing, then, you know, maybe GIMP is the best. Some people might not agree or something like that, but we try and make concrete recommendations so they don't have to spend all their time looking for the right tools. They kind of have them there in their hands, and they're the best tools that are the most usable and the most mature. So I guess in terms of the problems we're trying to address, are things, obviously, exclusion from access to the tech tool based on, you know, money, I guess. People being dependent on proprietary software, they can't adapt. So, you know, someone, you know, Microsoft is probably not interested in translating a program into Farsi or Burmese or some kind of obscure script that someone actually really needs. So obviously with open source, someone can do that. It's obviously hard for lay users to find the tools, as I mentioned. Downloading problems with bandwidth in developing countries, obviously you can't, you know, downloading OpenOffice on a dial-up connection is pretty much close to, it's pretty much impossible, near impossible. Obviously people can't pay for licenses, and then people who are working on sensitive issues around human rights or something like that, if, you know, having pirated software or having, you know, pirated version of Microsoft is kind of an increased risk for them if the government wants to come in and, you know, basically, you know, slap them a big fine or something, and as one way to kind of disable them. And then obviously free and open source is often ethically you know, in concert with a lot of these organizations, because, you know, free and open source and all the rest of it. I guess additional problems is for us that we've found is that a lot of multimedia tools, free and open source multimedia tools, are still quite immature from a real lay user perspective. The UIs are quite difficult, the documentation isn't always there, or it's extremely geeky and there's not a lot of the functionality that people expect. Often seems when you go around surveying the tools that a lot of projects aren't collaborating. Everyone has their little kind of free and open source kind of fiefdom of their project that they're developing that they're going to get the kudos for. And I think that there's a lot of more collaboration that needs to happen between those projects. I mean, there's 10 or 15 open source video editing programs maybe that projects that seem to be going on. But I mean, the people who are more deeply involved might know more about the collaboration, but from an outside perspective, it's a bit like, why aren't these people talking to these people? And it often seems that if developers are scratching their own itch, that a lot of them aren't necessarily multimedia creators. Sorry, I'm being very harsh at the moment, but hopefully it's useful as well. So I guess I'm interested in why this is occurring and how you can get more multimedia creators collaborating with programmers, which I guess, again, with Engage Media has been part of the ideas that Anna and I are actually, you know, multimedia creators. We're not geeks. Obviously still using Macs. And, you know, we're trying to get into, we want to kind of support free and open source because we believe it and think it's a very viable thing. But for us, there are a lot of things that need to happen for it, you know, to be as viable as we think it needs to be. So, you know, what are the weak spots, you know, and who are the implementers and how can those people sync up? How much time do I have? About 2 minutes or 3 minutes or something. I guess I've pretty much gone through those already. So it's, I guess, in terms of giving people a very quick demo that obviously people can have a look themselves. Let's see what starts up. They're kind of slim and 3CD editions. So, for example, the audio video one has Dynabolic and OpenCD and the audio video CD that we produce, and we also produce a kind of single CD slim version of just the CD that we do, and then Open Publishing and includes Ubuntu and OpenCD again and SME servers on the base disk. But basically this is kind of booting from the CD, so you just kind of use Drupal and then grab that down and put it onto the CD, but essentially you just navigate around it as if it's a website and, you know, grab the tool and then just copy it straight from the CD without having to, you know, download it. So you get it in a couple of seconds, essentially. So, and then the documentation and all that is also added onto there. So that's, so this is obviously the audio video edition. So yeah, people can have a bit more of a play around and see what it looks like. So just to finish off, we'll just briefly on creating the kits. Generally, that we partner with another organisation who has an expertise in the particular area. So the audio video edition was actually produced with Engage Media. The base was produced with an organisation in South Africa called Women's Net. Open Publishing was produced with iCommons, which is the International Creative Commons network, and then Security Frontline Defenders. And then there's two new kits coming along, which is the Citizen Journalism Toolkit, which is produced with an NGO called Internews, and Mobiles, which is produced with a kind of African multimedia and human rights advocacy group called Fahamu. And then around editorial teams are kind of composed 10 to 15 people, and then often sprints will happen at the beginning that bring together people to kind of, over a few days, to basically nut out what are the kind of big problems, what are the areas, what are the tools people need, what software actually works, what doesn't, people debate what they think is good. Mobile's kit is for, I'm not working on that one, but as far as I understand, it's going to be for, well, it's still based around kind of campaigning and things like that, so there'll be some kind of telephony aspects and things like that, but it'll be slightly more kind of mobile phone applications, or a lot of it will actually be slightly more on the technique side or the strategy side of the mobiles, given that a lot of the people that we're addressing don't necessarily have amazing mobile phones, so that's always a kind of toss-up in what you're doing. Do you kind of give people the greatest and latest tools for the greatest and latest phone, which a lot of people don't have, or how do you adapt to the actual situation and the technology people are using? And then there's a very interesting site called Social Source Commons, which we may kind of start using as a back end, which is quite interesting, kind of, which some people might know is kind of social networking around, I guess, software recommendations, essentially. I won't go through that. Just to conclude, I guess what we're trying to do is change who has access to the kind of means of production and distribution, particularly around multimedia. Shift the dynamics of who can speak and who has to listen in terms of media creation. And I've kind of repeated myself again. And then again with the who can create media, who can have secure computer systems, who can take advantage of sophisticated organizational software in the case of the base edition, and then I guess open up new channels and capacity for widespread participation, and I guess really changing that broadcast model to kind of many, many participation and collaboration. So that's essentially it.